Hi, everybody. I'm Christina Gregory Campbell. I'm the Vice President of Communications here at Independent Sector. I'm just launching this call with you. It's the COVID-19 relief legislative update with our wonderful panelists here, Ben Kershaw and Wes Cullum. They will be leading the conversation. Because we had a high volume of folks register, we went ahead and made this listen-only mode, but you can ask questions through the Q&A box. So please do that throughout, and we'll take them at the end. Any questions or any other issues, also flag in the chat box. Otherwise, I will, and we are recording. Sorry, we are recording the call. If it is helpful for any of you to share that afterwards, we'll have that as well. So with that, I'll pass it over to Ben.
Great. Thank you, Christina. Good morning, all. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. For a quick overview of where things stand on Capitol Hill and with the administration in regards to urgent COVID-19 emergency aid legislation. It was a busy week last week, certainly a busy weekend on the Hill. And we are always glad to have Wes Cullum from Washington Council Ernst & Young joining us. Just a quick snapshot, I think, of where we come into this moment before we check in with Wes. And again, it's fun to see us all not, sheltered in Capitol Hill hideaways somewhere. Wes, I don't know about you, I could get used to lobbying in sweatpants. This could be a good career shift, I think.
Well, big change, yes.
Since the nonprofit sector has really mobilized around what it wants out of this bill, a few key data points. So over 200 national organizations have now signed on to our community's letter, requesting the nonprofit sector be included. Independent sector's own grassroots network, and I'm sure many of yours have also been tremendously engaged on this issue. So just our particular alert has generated in the last 3 days, more than 10 times as many contacts to Congress as our grassroots network generated in all of last year combined. And so I say that to mean, we are all tremendously engaged and Capitol Hill is aware of that. The nonprofit sector is squarely at the negotiating table. The three asks that the nonprofit sector has been focusing on most directly with Capitol Hill over the last week are the following. We have been urging that they expressly include charitable nonprofits in any emergency funding proposals to the tune of $60 billion. No matter the appropriate mechanism. We've been seeking to ensure that all nonprofits qualify for new emergency small business loans. In particular, we've been pushing for clarified definitions about what a nonprofit is, about a current cap on 500 employees, and about a current exclusion for Medicaid recipient nonprofit organizations. And lastly, we have been pressing for an improved, a robust above the line charitable deduction in that legislation. So those are some of our community's perspectives that I think we all brought into last week and the weekend. And I'm happy to turn it over now to Wes for some of the latest on the bill that is still meandering its way through Senate procedural votes and in terms of content and in terms of kind of what next steps are. So Wes, thank you very much.
Sure, Ben. Thanks. Happy to give a quick update as to where things stand on Capitol Hill. Senator McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, has put out bills last week and then a revised version over the weekend of his package for economic stimulus that includes, as you mentioned, 7A loan, small business loan expansions, tax provisions, and also a broader loan package in there as well for the broader business community, as well as various expansions of the unemployment insurance program, spending increases as well amongst that package. That was introduced by McConnell alone and did not have the support of the Senate Democrats on Capitol Hill. They had a vote last night in the Senate to proceed to an underlying bill to help move that along, and did not get the votes to proceed to that bill. So negotiations are ongoing today between both McConnell and Schumer and the White House, as well as Speaker Pelosi, who is back in town, has been engaged in the conversations over the weekend and into today. The Senate will be back in session at noon today, and the hope is they can reach an agreement on a package today where they can put it on the Senate floor and vote on it and pass it through by tonight, possibly tomorrow, if they cannot get agreement to move that quickly. So what we're looking for really is for a revised version to come out. Those negotiations, Speaker Pelosi has indicated she might introduce their version, kind of a counter to the McConnell bill, to kind of lay out their priorities and their focus, what they want to see in the package. We've not seen that yet. It could be does not get introduced, and we just see a final negotiated package between the House and the Senate that gets released and then voted on in the Senate. So kind of eagerly waiting and watching to see what produces gets produced out of those conversations between the Senate and House leadership and the White House.
Got it. Thank you, Wes. It's certainly still a very much an evolving picture. Can I ask you to tell us a little bit more about, what is in there for the sector? What's some of the content pieces on the, the particular asks that I mentioned? Where do things stand in the latest draft and in, sort of the latest negotiations that you're hearing from the Hill?
Yeah, sure. So on the kind of two items you mentioned on the 7A or the SBA small business loan program, as well as the charitable deduction provision in there. The 7A loan program, basically that would provide for a new, it's called a paycheck protection program through the SBA, expansion of the current 7A or small business lending facility the SBA has been using for years to include small business and nonprofit employers under Section 501c3 could avail themselves of this loan program through the SBA. The program would be up to 2.5 times your yearly payroll costs, and it would basically give you a loan with deferred payment until next year for that loan amount. You could have portions of that loan forgiven if you maintain your employment levels for the next several months compared to what they were in the same period in 2019. And so the loan program could turn into essentially a grant or a forgiven loan if you qualify for to maintain your employment levels during the next couple months, basically through June 30th of this year compared to last year's period. The limit on that is a 500 employee limit for nonprofit employers. There are some exceptions to that limit for other industries. Interestingly enough, it's tied to the SBA size standards. And so some industries have higher amounts. For example, oil drillers and miners have higher amounts, as well as tobacco manufacturers, interestingly enough, be up to 1,500 or 1,250 employee, higher amounts.
So good news for all the nonprofit oil drillers out there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, good.
In addition to that, there would be a prohibition. So if you get Medicaid funding as a nonprofit employer, you could not qualify, unfortunately, for this SBA 7A loan program. So just kind of in addition to that, that's 7A, that's the kind of loan program for small employers. Also, as you mentioned, the Republican McConnell bill does include a universal deduction for charitable contributions made during this calendar year to charities. The cap would be $300 per taxpayer for that charitable deduction for this year. It would also waive the AGI limits currently in place for contributions more generally for this year as well as part of that package. The final piece is obviously also expansion of unemployment compensation, unemployment insurance in there as well. Also would have other spending provisions in that package across the board. There's labor provisions, education provisions in there, as well as there's a $500 billion broader loan program in there through the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve to expand additional funding, lending facilities for the broader business community. As part of that is targeted towards airlines and air cargo companies, as well as part of it to a broader business sector of the economy. As I read it, it's eligible businesses. We need a clarification on that, but it doesn't look to me like that would be applicable, and nonprofits would be able to qualify for that larger loan program through Treasury and the Federal Reserve as it's written now.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I know that is of great interest to many in the sector, as are some of the you know, pieces that you mentioned that may impact particular portions of all of us, such as the education provisions, the health appropriations, the labor provisions, et cetera. So those all bear close watching. I know are certainly many of them under heated discussion on Capitol Hill.
One of the things I didn't mention, if I could just insert, yeah, is there would also be a provision there for employers that have payroll tax liability to delay the payment of that payroll tax liability that is due between now and the end of the year until basically for 1 year. So wouldn't be due until end of 2021. Half would be due next year, then half would be due in 2022. So basically there's a deferral of your payroll tax liability for all employers that have a payroll tax liability, and that would include nonprofit employers as well as for-profit employers.
A deferral.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So before we move on, a question that someone's asking, just to clarify, you said that the SBA limit is 2.5 times annual payroll.
Correct. Yes. It would be the lesser of that payroll amount or $10 million.
Great. Thank you, Wes. Thank you, Sally.
So I'm going to jump in here. Sorry, this is Christina again at IS. Just, I realize a lot of folks are actually just dialed in using their phone and not seeing anything on a computer. So just wanted to, again, for folks who are watching us and seeing us on Zoom, feel free to put in your questions in the Q&A box. For those of you who are on just the phone, feel free to email publicpolicy@independentsector.org. We have somebody monitoring that that email address, and we'll get the questions fed to Ben and Wes in a minute. So either way, if you're on the phone, we got you. If you're here on video, hello, and use the chat function and we'll go that way.
Thank you, Christina. So I would like to provide a quick update on some of our collective advocacy efforts on a few of these pieces before we turn back to questions. Wes mentioned both the 500 employee limit, that is not as simple as the 500 employee limit as you spelled out, Wes, and the Medicaid restriction as well. We have been pushing to eliminate both of those restrictions. We think they're both inappropriate to help the nonprofit sector meet the challenges it is facing and meet the challenges that the nation faces right now. The 500 limit we have heard is going to be a harder battle to win for us, meaning it's going to be harder to eliminate than maybe the Medicaid restriction. Neither of them are guaranteed victories. I think neither of them are guaranteed losses, but that 500 limit is, as Wes could certainly tell you, sort of a magic number in a lot of cases with regards to the SBA in particular. On Medicaid, we think that there is some real opposition to striking that prohibition. But there are also, there are legislators in the room who are aware of, how many critical and vulnerable nonprofits do receive Medicaid funding and really need to be made eligible for this piece. The other major advocacy effort that the independent sector is joining along with many other organizations is our effort to increase this $300 above the line deduction. Any above the line deduction we feel is a sort of a welcome recognition of this problem of, again, both the need that the sector will face in the coming months and the impact on giving that the current crisis is likely having. We believe it is essential to increase that amount to meet this moment. There have been multiple amendments discussed, even filed by senators. We are tracking in particular a bipartisan amendment filed by Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. And that amendment would increase the $300 cap to approximately $4,000 for individuals and $8,000 for married couples filing jointly, to one third of the standard deduction. IS has strongly endorsed that amendment because it is so much better than the $300 limit in the current bill. That is a big increase from $300 to $4,000 or $8,000, and we're aware of that. This is not a policy that comes for free, but in the context of over a $1 trillion bill, we think that this would be a spectacular use of taxpayer resources, and that the cost excuse it is indeed nothing more than an excuse at this point. We're unsure if there will be a vote on this amendment. As Wes noted, they're sort of back into negotiating phase after procedural votes failed. But IS has endorsed this amendment and urges others to endorse it as well. If you're interested, please email publicpolicy@independentsector.org. And we can get you hooked up with the form currently being gathered by our friends and colleagues at the National Council of Nonprofits for endorsements on this amendment for Senator Lankford. So why don't I pause for questions there, unless Wes has anything else to add on what I just mentioned, or unless negotiations have changed on the Hill in the last 5 minutes, which they seem to do.
Nothing, no breakthrough at the moment. Just to clarify on the SBA program, it does, the cap you can get is 2.5 times, 2.5 times your annual payroll. The amount that's forgiven is basically the amount you pay your payroll costs for your employees during the covered period, which is basically March 15th or February 15th through June 30th. And so the forgiven amount is not the full amount of the loan if you take out a full amount based on your payroll, but only for the period you keep your employees on your payroll through the next several months.
Got it. And when you say employees, Wes, how are full-time and part-time employees factoring into that 500 employee calculation?
Yeah, for full-time employees, are calculated, but if you had part-time employees, you basically have to take an average of their wages and get the full amount, or to get the full payroll costs in there. But it's not, it needs probably need to be, we'll hopefully get some guidance from the SBA and government on this when it comes out and how it actually works in practice.
Okay, and about how that, which employees count towards that 500 limit or not.
Yeah. Yeah,
and right. That's an area.
There is something in there. Some of those costs do include if you pay, for example, independent contractors, that would count towards your payroll costs as well as employees.
Okay, as well as employees. Okay. For folks on the line there, that could be a major difference maker. Also, have a question about sort of what the process will be. You know, let's assume that the SBA text as it is gets enacted in the next couple days. Do you have any sense about what the process will be for applying? Sort of how quickly, we've heard this talked about as a payroll advance. So how quickly can organizations expect to access this funding if they're currently, you know, watching their balance sheets and watching their reserves dry up? You know, I'm not asking you to give people a date, but what's the process maybe look like for getting that money out the door to nonprofits in need?
Yeah, the way that it works, actually, it's using existing 7A, what's called a 7A loan program through the SBA. The SBA generally doesn't give loans directly. They just guarantee 100% in this case, the proceeds of a loan given through a financial institution. So the nonprofit would have to go to their bank or credit union to start the process of getting the loan, which then the SBA will guarantee 100% to the bank. It gets paid back as part of the process and get those funds through the bank. So it would not be directly through the SBA. It would basically be through your financial institution. Get that process going, whoever you deal with on a, on your banking relationship, apply for this loan, and then the portion that you use to pay your payroll taxes costs that covered for the next couple of months would be forgiven. Other amounts would not be forgiven. So it's, you know, in a sense, it's a loan at the outset, and then a portion of it is forgiven. It turns into just don't have to pay it back, that portion. So, but you have to go through your bank to get qualified and apply for it. In this case, there aren't the strict rules about under usually SBA programs that says you must be denied or not get credit elsewhere or to qualify. In this case, that requirement is waived. And so you can go to your bank and get this funding fairly easily. The requirements are very low to get this loan.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And then, you know, one other question on the SBA piece. How do the interest rates factor in for organizations that are receiving these 7A loans for the portion presumably that's not forgiven? I know on the payroll piece, you know, the right, that not just the payroll loan is forgiven, but the interest rate and the costs of the loan are also forgiven, I believe. But for the portion not forgiven, how do the interest rates work?
It doesn't specify the interest rate. They basically go back to the SBA program itself. They would be, you know, I think they would be fairly low, but it's not specified what interest rates they would be in the program. I have to go back and look at what the SBA program is offering through the banking program currently. It does not specify it in the statute. There would not be any SBA fees that apply to this, so it would be a no fee loan. The bank would probably charge you know, some fees as part of the arrangement or, you know, for the loan. But the SBA would not charge fees for this loan, and the rates I think would be have to be worked out between the nonprofit and the bank. But you know, the hope is they'd be very reasonable, but not specified in statute what they would be.
Got it. Okay. And we have one other question coming in from Marcy asking: is the payroll tax amount from March 15th through June 30th forgiven, or the payroll amount itself? And it is the payroll. It is not just the payroll tax that that we expect to be forgiven for organizations participating in this loan. That's correct, Wes?
Yes. Yeah, the amount that is forgiven the loan would basically be based on how much you paid in payroll costs during that period, but would not forgive your payroll tax liability. You'll be,
yep. Right. Okay. I want to pause a moment. I think we've answered a good cross-section of questions. On a few, you know, wide-ranging issues. We know that everyone's time is tight right now, and so we are very grateful to you all for joining us this morning. I know that there are a number of questions that we, you know, have not answered in this moment, and we will look to follow up on those as well as those submitted to publicpolicy@independentsector.org. I will also note that on Thursday afternoon of this week at 2 p.m. is our regularly scheduled monthly policy update. And I imagine that we will be talking about this very same issue on Thursday afternoon. So we look forward to seeing you then. Christina, I don't know if you want to send us off or if I should just thank everyone for joining.
Well, no, yeah, go ahead.
we really appreciate your partnership, all of you on this. Certainly thank you to Wes for all the work you're doing on behalf of the nonprofit sector right now. We know that there is great engagement in the sector. We know that there is a lot at stake, and we are just honored to have so many of you standing shoulder to shoulder with us collectively on this fight. We look forward to staying in touch. Thank you again. Talk to you Thursday afternoon.